75 years ago tomorrow, Americans gathered around their radios as President Franklin Roosevelt spoke to Congress just 24 hours after the nation was stunned by the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. That day of infamy speech, FDR's first inaugural speech, and a number of other talks by President Roosevelt are being restored and digitized by the Franklin D. Roosevelt Presidential Library and Museum in Hyde Park. The library's director, Paul Sparrow, says the project is a partnership with AT&T and the National Archives and Records Administration.
We actually went back into the original 35mm film stock, and they did a frame-by-frame restoration, cleaning up dust or scratches, and then we went back to the original audio recordings and resynced them up to the film so we could get the best possible quality in both an HD video version and in the new Ultra HD 4K version. And we couldn't have done this without the support of our partner, AT&T. And the Pearl Harbor speech and the Four Freedoms speech were the two that we did first. You can now see the Pearl Harbor speech here as part of the exhibit at the FDR Library. It plays on a large screen. And when you see it compared to the footage you normally see, which is all scratchy and old and the audio is hard to hear, it really jumps out at you. And we play the entire 6.5-minute speech here in the exhibit so that people can really hear not just the famous first line about the date that will live in infamy, but you really understand the power, the great writing that he had that day. And then when going forward over the next year, we hope to do 8 more, so we'll end up with 10 of FDR's greatest speeches in this, you know, newly restored form, and they'll all be available to teachers and students on our education hub, which also provides curriculum material, activities, and a wide range of resources for students and teachers.
Where did these films come from? Were they from the old newsreels that were shown in the theaters? Were they recordings that the radio networks made? What was the original source?
The original source is often newsreels. Some of them are still copyrighted, but they are shot on film in these formal settings. In this case, it was FDR's address to Congress on the day after the attacks of Pearl Harbor. Some of the speeches are going to be, for example, the first inaugural address, which he delivered in March of 1933. And film at that point was mostly being shot by the newsreel crews. There was no White House press office the way there is today. So some of the newsreels have entered into the public domain, and some are still protected by copyright. But all of the original film stock was donated to the National Archives and is held by the National Archives.
Again, how will teachers and students be able to access this once they're all ready to go?
They visit the FDR Library website, and under Educational Teachers Resources, there's a hub there for it. So each of the speeches will have their own separate landing page, which will have access to the audio, access to all the various drafts of the speech, curriculum material, context for it, activities for the students to engage in. One of the things that we really were stressing was that we wanted to make this material available for students on their phones. And we all know that more and more people are accessing web content through their mobile devices. So this is a very mobile-friendly site. It's easy to see and read on your phone. That material can stream through to it. We know that an increasing number of students are using their phones as their primary homework device. So we wanted to make sure it was very accessible.
What did you learn? Anything new from watching these, from listening to these that you didn't already know before?
Well, what's amazing about the Pearl Harbor speech in particular is how powerful it is and the way it was written. I mean, you know, this was the worst day of President Roosevelt's presidency. It was the worst day of his life, the worst defeat in American history. You know, his beloved battleships lay in a smoking heap in the Pearl Harbor, and yet in that moment, you know, as the smoke cleared, a great leader emerged. He picked the weight of the free world on his paralyzed legs and carried it into the future with this speech that sort of inspired and motivated and unified a country in a true moment of crisis. And so when you hear the speech over and over again and you look at the different versions of it and how it evolved, it's very impressive. He basically 3 hours after he found out about the attack, he sat down with his private secretary, Grace Tully, and dictated the speech to her. Short, it's only 6.5 minutes long. Then through the day, he would read the speech to the military cabinet, the congressional leaders, and they would react to it. And his secretary of state really wanted him to deliver this 30-minute, 17-page speech blow-by-blow description of every transgression the Japanese had done over the past decade. And FDR knew that's not what the American public wanted. The American public wanted a clear, concise statement about what happened and what we're going to do about it. And so I think it's important, as people look back, to understand the power of language. You know, his line, with confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph, so help us God. You know, that was the message that he wanted to deliver at that moment of peak crisis.
Some of it sounds almost Churchillian. Winston Churchill, his friend and his ally, did he sort of maybe not steal, but was inspired by his ally?
There's no question that Churchill and Roosevelt both aspired to greatness when it came to oratory. And Churchill, you know, I think was the master that really Roosevelt studied. He studied his language. He studied how he had a rhythm to his speech. He studied particularly how Roosevelt appealed to the heart, to the emotional side. Roosevelt had to deal with similar things that Churchill had dealt with when they were bombing London, and his, you know, people were waking up every morning to ruin and death. And so Roosevelt looked to Churchill as both an inspiration, but more importantly, as a partner. As he wrote in his note to Churchill that day, we're all in the same boat now.
And was he speaking to Congress or really speaking to the American people more?
I think he was speaking to the American people, and I think he was speaking to the world. I think that's, it was probably the most listened to radio broadcast in history up to that point, because not only did every American listen to it, and did American soldiers and sailors all over the world, but people in other countries were listening to this. So we had just gotten to the point where you could have these broadcasts transferred to other countries. And he knew he was speaking to the people that were fighting for freedom all over the world. And that was when he was trying to send the message that America is now in this war. Remember, Great Britain and Russia were both on the verge of collapse. You know, they had been fighting this war for several years. The German army was only a few miles outside Moscow. The British had suffered a series of defeats in North Africa. The Nazis controlled Europe. The Japanese controlled almost all of the Western Pacific and Eastern Asia. So this was a desperate time for many, many people. The Australians were afraid the Japanese were about to invade Australia. So he was speaking to a global audience. And again, his message, with confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph. That was the message he wanted people to understand and to believe.
Paul Sparrow is the director of the Franklin D. Roosevelt Presidential Library and Museum in Hyde Park, New York.